I had no idea where I was. I turned 90 degrees and rode the next peak and looked again, to my right. Maybe there would be a boat out there somewhere. There wasn't. There was nothing. I was alone in the middle of the Atlantic, drifting. We never had one come back. I turned 180 and rode a peak and looked to my left, nothing there. I fell back into the trough and rode the next peak and looked behind me. I was 100 yards from shore. I could see the big house. I could see lit windows. I could see the wall. I could see the blue haze of its lights. I hauled my shirt up on my shoulders. It was soaked and heavy. I took a breath, rolled onto my front, and started swimming. 100 yards. Any kind of a halfway decent Olympic competitor could swim 100 yards in about 45 seconds. And any kind of a halfway decent high school swimmer could do it in less than a minute. It took me nearly 15. The tide was going out. I felt like I was going backward. I felt like I was still drowning. But eventually, I touched the shore and got my arms around a smooth rock that was coated with freezing slime and held on tight. The sea was still rough. Big waves thumped in on me and smashed my cheek against the granite, regular as clockwork. I didn't care. I savored the impacts. Each and every one of them, I loved that rock. I rested on it for a minute more, and then crawled my way around behind the garage block, sloshing along half in and half out of the water, crouched low. Then I crawled out on my hands and knees, rolled over on my back, stared up at the sky. Now you had one come back, Harley. The waves came in and reached my waist. I shuffled on my back until they reached only my knees, rolled onto my front again, lay with my face pressed down on the rock. I was cold, chilled to the bone. My coat was gone. My jacket was gone. The persuaders were gone. The Beretta was gone. I stood up. Water sluiced off me. I staggered a couple of steps, heard Leon Garber in my head. What doesn't kill you only makes you stronger. He thought JFK had said it. I thought it was actually Friedrich Nietzsche, and he said, destroy, not kill. What doesn't destroy us makes us stronger. I staggered 2 more steps and leaned up against the back of the courtyard wall and threw up about 1 gallon of salt water. That made me feel a little better. I jerked my arms around and kicked each leg in turn to try to get some circulation going and some water out of my clothes. Then I plastered my soaking hair back on my head and tried a couple of long, slow breaths. I was worried about coughing. My throat was raw and aching from the cold and the salt. Then I walked along the back wall and turned at the corner, found my little dip, and visited my hidden bundle 1 last time. I'm coming to get you, Quinn. My watch was still working, and it showed me my hour was long gone. Duffy would have called ATF 20 minutes ago, but their response would be slow. I doubted if they had a field office in Portland. Boston was probably the closest, where the maid had been sent out from, so I still had enough time. The food truck was gone. Evidently, dinner had been canceled. But the other vehicles were still there. The Cadillac, the town car, the 2 Suburbans, 8 hostiles still in the house, plus Elizabeth and the cook. I didn't know which category to put Richard in. I kept tight against the house wall and looked in every window. The cook was in the kitchen. She was cleaning up. Geist and Maiden had left all their stuff there. I ducked under the sill and moved on. The dining room was a ruin. The wind blowing in through the shattered window had caught the linen tablecloth and thrown plates and glasses everywhere. There were dunes of plaster dust in the corners where the wind had piled them. There were 2 big holes in the ceiling, probably in the ceiling of the room above, and the room above that, too. The Brennickers had probably made it all the way out through the roof like moonshots. The square room where I had played Russian roulette had the three Libyans and Quinn's three guys in it. They were all sitting around the oak table, doing nothing. They looked blank and shocked, but they looked settled. They weren't going anywhere. I ducked under the sill and moved on. Came all the way around to Elizabeth Beck's parlor. She was in there, with Richard. Somebody had taken the dead guy out. She was on her sofa, talking fast. I couldn't hear what she was saying, but Richard was listening hard. I ducked under the sill and moved on. Beck and Quinn were in Beck's little room. Quinn was in the red armchair, and Beck was standing in front of the cabinet with the machine gun display. Beck looked pale and grim and hostile, and Quinn looked full of himself. He had a fat, unlit cigar in his hand. He was rolling it between his fingers and thumb and lining up a silver cutter at the business end. I made it back to the kitchen after completing a whole circle. Stepped inside. I didn't make a sound. The metal detector stayed quiet. The cook didn't hear me coming. I caught her from behind, clamped a hand over her mouth, and dragged her over to a counter. I wasn't taking any chances after what Richard had done to me. I found a linen towel in a drawer and used it as a gag. Found another to tie her wrists. Found another to tie her ankles. I left her sitting uncomfortably on the floor next to the sink. I found a fourth towel and put it in my pocket. Then I stepped out into the hallway. It was quiet. I could hear Elizabeth Beck's voice, faintly. Her parlor door was standing open. I couldn't hear anything else. I went straight to the door of Beck's den, opened it, stepped inside, closed it again. I was met by a haze of cigar smoke. Quinn had just lit up. I got the feeling he had been laughing about something. Now, he was frozen with shock. Beck was the same, pale and frozen. They were just staring at me. "I'm back," I said. Beck had his mouth open. I hit him with a cigarette punch. His mouth slammed shut, and his head snapped back, and his eyes rolled up, and he went straight down on the three deep rugs on the floor. It was a decent blow, but not my best. His son had saved his life after all. If I hadn't been so tired from swimming, a better punch would have killed him. Quinn came straight at me, straight out of the chair. He dropped his cigar, went for his pocket. I hit him in the stomach. Air punched out of him, and he folded forward and dropped to his knees. I hit him in the head and pushed him down on his stomach, knelt on his back with my knees high up between his shoulder blades. "No," he said. He had no air. "Please." I put the flat of one hand on the back of his head, took my chisel out of my shoe, and slid it in behind his ear and up into his brain, slowly, inch by inch. He was dead before it was halfway in, but I kept it going until it was buried all the way to the hilt. I left it there. I wiped the handle with the towel from my pocket, and then I spread the towel over his head and stood up wearily.